911. What's your emergency?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the PIO Podcast, a place to discuss all public information related topics for police, fire, EMS, and local and federal government organizations.
It was a good learning experience for a lot of us that social media is not real life.
But we have to remember the media are very rarely a target audience. They're simply that conduit.
Our words have impacts on individuals, and it may not be positive. So just being thoughtful and mindful of the words that we speak.
I think what's so interesting about this position too, and this job and this profession, is that every one of us is looking for purpose. And when we find it here, that's it.
To know is that a crisis for one is not necessarily a crisis for another.
Welcome to season 3 of the PIO Podcast. We've added a bunch of new content for this season. We have a video blog. We will have enhanced social media, and we will be running a Patreon. So before we begin, a quick note from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by the Social Media Strategy Summit, the leading provider of social media education. They host annual events designed specifically for government communications professionals like you to help you build and engage your communities through social media. Visit their website at socialmediastrategiesummit.com to learn more and use promo code PIO Podcast for 10% off of your registration. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the next episode.
Welcome to season 3, episode 2 of the PIO Podcast. Today we have Jack Holden Gaines. He's a public affairs officer and a podcaster. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Oh, yeah. All right, Jack. So I looking at your background, thank you for the resume, by the way. And looking at your background, I kind of snuck on your LinkedIn and looked at that. You've had some really incredible experience as a PAO and done some really, you've seen a few things in the world, I'm sure.
It's been a Forrest Gump of public affairs and PIO work. I don't know how I ended up in all those spots, but I did. It's been a wild ride, yeah.
So you started out as a PIO working for the state of California, is that correct?
That's correct. I was at California Department of Transportation as a spokesperson over in the San Francisco Bay Area. So whenever there was a traffic jam on the Golden Gate Bridge or the Bay Bridge, we were getting ready to demolish the old Bay Bridge at that time. So there was a lot of stoppages and traffic issues. And so I'd get these calls at 4 a.m. because the bridge was already locked up all the way to Berkeley. And they're like, hey, what's going on with the bridge? And I was, you know, 6 inches deep into my pillow. So I had to, but they knew the drill. They would be, you know, they'd be like, KGO would just say, well, I'll give you 5 minutes. And I'm like, right. Oh, great. And I would call the op center and they would say, oh, it's this damn truck. It broke down. We're working on it. And then I'd call them back, you know, kind of in between sheets, you know, just kind of like, oh, yes, this is what's going on in the op center. And that's kind of where I fell in love with the trade. It's been great. And honestly, working in a utility or a public service PIO job, it's the best way to learn the trade because you're in the trenches. You know, you've got people coming in from the street that, you know, some of them are there for real questions. Some of them are looking to use the bathroom for, you know, a shower because they've been out on the street all day. To dealing with them, to going to engineering meetings and having, you know, legislative representatives show up unannounced, or, you know, people that are attorneys or engineers and arguing with your engineer on how the bridge design is and how traffic impact will be, to doing mitigation and, you know, responding to old fires and everything. It just, it comes at you at a million miles an hour, and you learn how to manage that messaging, how to manage people. And then as you get deeper into it, you start to figure out, hey, there's a planning side of this. There's a human development side where you can actually, you know, prep the message and get ahead of the message to where the reporter gets to you and you already know what they're going to ask because you've set the conditions for them to ask just certain focuses and you've got them to focus on certain questions to make it easier for your job. And that is when I started to shift over to the Army and work for them in Iraq and Afghanistan and Europe, Africa, Asia.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing with as you learn this field and you learn the profession. I think most people that come into it sometimes, I'll do this for a little while and then I'll leave. And then there are those kind of like me and maybe you, and we get involved in this because we truly love what we do. And right. It's a great experience. But the amazing thing is when you can anticipate the reporter's questions and have the answers well in advance, and you know what the next question is going to be, and you come up with that perfect answer, and you've got them, they have this look on their face like, oh. I did that with a reporter today. I did that with a reporter today. Asked me all these questions, and I anticipated every one of them. And the market that I'm in, it's a little, the reporters are fairly new. So it's kind of, sometimes it's entertaining when I do it. Today, this guy just stopped. He goes, I think I'm done. I go, I guess you are.
You know, I remember one time, it was during the first Iraq war, I was mobilized to Pleasanton, California. The town's actually called Dublin, but I say Pleasanton because it throws people off. But I would get these calls from my friends and they're like, oh my God, I heard that you were deployed. I'm like, yes. They're like, where are you at? I'm like, I'm in Dublin. And they would pause. Oh, that's not so bad. I'm like, no, it really isn't. I get home at noon. But we had a lot of different reporters like that. And that's when I started to learn how to shape the message and do preemptive stories to kind of draw out what the command was trying to say. And at one point, I remember this very young but intuitive NBC reporter was there, local NBC. And he's like, I see what you're doing. I'm surprised you haven't said, hey, would you like a sucker on the way out?
Those are the good reporters.
If you have any other questions, I will answer them. It's just, that's what the story is.
That's awesome. All right, so you've alluded to it already. So you talked about being in Afghanistan and Iraq. So you've worked some really pretty high-profile positions as a PAO in the DOD and in the Army, am I correct?
Well, whenever I deploy, I usually end up with the State Department. When I went to Iraq, I went to a provincial reconstruction team, and I was the military public affairs liaison to the PRT. But I was also a public diplomacy officer. So I got to do outreach, community service, and development, as well as public affairs and crisis communication. Matter of fact, we had two mass casualty events where, about a couple hundred people were blown up by a truck bomb. And this happened a few times. One was the original and then one was retribution. And so we were, this was an airbase. So they would come bring the ambulances to the airbase and we put them on to either a Turkish C-5 or C-17 or another American cargo vessel and fly them out to some of the partner nations so that they can hospital these folks. And so, my job switched. I would be one day looking at a Kishla, which is a Turkish Ottoman era fort, to have it rebuilt. And the next day, I've got, C-17s and C-5s and commercial vehicles coming in to pick up wounded. And so that was a crazy, crazy time. But I think that it was super fulfilling because I got to take communication and actually apply it on ground to change lives and make them better.
You find the most challenging from making the transition from a civilian PIO position to working for the State Department in a civil service kind of position in that environment?
Yeah, I think the biggest transition was going from civilian to the military, because when I walk up and say, hi, John, and the dude's a colonel, I get yelled at. So...
Yeah. No, that happens in law enforcement too. There's the in the office conversation, mm-hmm. and then there's the public side of the conversation where you might be at an event, and if you don't say hello, Commander, hello, Deputy Chief, you get that kind of side eye look. You're like, oh no, I'm in trouble again.
Right. And so, yeah, matter of fact, I've learned a lot about law enforcement and public affairs. I think it's an interesting field, and I'll be frank, I've bumped into the wrong side of it a lot of times, and it's taught me how to do it right. Because, I mean, when I first worked with the FBI in Europe on a few cases, I was at UCOM in their Joint Interagency Counter-Trafficking Center with the FBI, and they were working some cases, and I overshared a product that this FBI agent was working on with other FBI officers, but he still was like, you don't do that. I'm the agent. This is my product. I don't share it with them because I have to prosecute this guy with the AUSA, not these guys. And I don't want them in my case. I don't want them in my business. And so that's how I learned how to, you know, keep it to the agent, as well as managing embargoing, you know, news stories so they don't impact investigations, as well as exposure. Sometimes we want exposure to deter against future crime,
right,
or to call out community awareness. And that's actually where I started to learn how to do counterterror messages.
All right, so let's talk about that. Talk about how you learned about that, because that's something that we don't discuss on this podcast often. I don't really have many people that are dealing with it. So talk about that.
Okay. Well, public affairs has a role, has a very important role with counterterrorism messaging. And often we get shoved to the side because the groups that are like information operations or clandestine operations, they want to be in the game and they don't want to hear what the public messages are about. But the truth is, we have a role. When I was in Afghanistan, again, as a public diplomacy officer working in developing programs and operations like running radio and television nationally, I was also in the lead for the counter-Taliban influence program. And that's the weird thing about State Department is counter-influence is a public affairs, public diplomacy staple. And the reason is that we, you know, hire people to go out into the areas where we're working, and they provide feedback. They're atmospherics folks. They call and say, this is what's going on in the market, or this is what I see going around the mosque, and this is what I see going on in the streets. You know, people are harassing the guards. And then it goes up to our contractors, and then we feed it out to advisors in the regions so that they can work with the governors, the local provincial governors, and their staff to find ways to outperform the Taliban. And the reason it's a public affairs and communication job is that as we get the feedback that the Taliban are, you know, negotiating to, you know, gain more power in this village, and they're also, you know, shutting down mosques, moderate mosques, or shutting down weddings in this other town, we take that information and we deliver it to the villages that are still in competition so that it exposes what they're doing and stigmatizes their actions to the adversary or to the target audience, excuse me. It stigmatizes the Taliban actions to the target audience. And that shifts the behavior. So that's why it's a messaging action versus a clandestine action.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, no, it does. And this is kind of goes in the same role that in law enforcement, when we're trying to message to the community about a particular issue. And like use of force, I think one of the worst things that we do in law enforcement is we don't message right on use of force early on. We always try and defend it after it's happened, but we do very limited preemptive actions before. And I think that's kind of an important thing. That's our version of counterterrorism, where we have to message about what is appropriate use of force and when should it be applied, and how long is long enough to wait for somebody before you go hands on. Those are the things I think that we as PIOs in the law enforcement end of it don't do a very good job.
It's a struggle because you have to show the human side of law enforcement without looking so vulnerable that you get attacks. You know, they attack your character.
Yeah, so. And there's always going to be the trolls that hate law enforcement. And in every field, there's the trolls that hate the military, the trolls that hate the politicians. They all love to jump on the bandwagon and attack, and it just is the way it is. All right, so let me ask you this, Jake. Let's talk about, what's 46X?
46X, well, 46X.us is the webpage. 46X is a social movement that I launched with some friends and that are still on active duty to rebuild public affairs, to add an operational side to it. Right now, DoD Public Affairs focuses on media management. And then there's a second section that focuses on getting the bands out or FN or public events. But that's it. There is no operational side. And since I've been doing a lot of operational public affairs, I felt frustrated because I didn't feel like that side of the trade was being represented. And after years of writing doctrine and having it thrown out and writing policy inside different theater commands and the joint staff and having it ignored, I said, screw it, I'm going to start a rebellion. And that's what I did. So I put a pirate flag up and I have a pirate face on the banner, you know, and it's really, but it's not piracy in the way of like stealing and attacking the bridge. It's more of, you know, building an aspirational platform that takes people from where they're currently at, where the Oxidor, where everyone is currently at with public affairs and saying, this is where we could be. This is what you could be doing. And this is how effective it is. And then giving examples of how in the commercial sector, this is already done. And we're, and this is one of the reasons why Army PAOs mostly cannot get a job in the commercial sector, because we underperform in our duties. And then when we go out with our resumes, they don't want us. And so I'm trying to fix that.
Okay. All right. So give me a concrete example of the things that you're trying to change.
Well, I just wrote an article called Operational Public Affairs. And what it talks about is very similar to the counterterrorism messaging, where a PAO would work closely with the operations chief and intelligence and the information operations to monitor what's going on around them in the information environment and contribute to the overall common operating picture, as we say in the Army, which is what's going on underground for that command and its focus. Now, a PAO would then say, I can do these operations, and then other elements of the command can maneuver within that to get things done. For example, say that we're a cyber organization and we are spotting a lot of collection and theft in a country like, I don't know, Singapore or Thailand or whatever. So I can look at it and say, boy, they sure like having our GOs come out and speak. Let's set up a university talking tour with a GO on cyber, and then other people can go in and either recruit people as sensors or build out law enforcement engagements or other types of operations, set up cyber hubs in the area, or build partner nation cyber development to help forward our mission. And that's the thing that we're missing. That's the thing with this whole, what they call it, strategic pacing with China and Russia, or strategic competition, is that we are not doing the public face, and it's the most effective. I was just interviewing David Maxwell on the 1CA podcast, and he's an old soft guy who gets on Talks Policy, and he discussed how the current conditions in foreign policy, the global competition, strategic competition, is actually political warfare and economic warfare. Mm-hmm. And he's right. And the thing is, public affairs has a role in that, because DOD writ large has to make sure that our adversaries don't decide to go kinetic and decide to go into a full-scale war. They also have to provide low-intensity conflict support, special forces, training, equipment, kind of like what's going on in Ukraine. We are involved. We are heavily involved, but we're not fighting.
Right.
And that's what the goal is for competition, is to stay out of fighting, but, you know, forward our wanted goals through our partners.
Okay.
Now, that makes sense?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. All right. So let me ask you this. Talking about a lot of foreign policy issues, how difficult is it working on those foreign policy issues knowing that politics is a driving force, how are you handling that from the PIO perspective or the PAO perspective? Obviously, you bring politics into anything, it always complicates things.
Yes and no. Yes and no. And this is one of the things, if I have a platform with seven different planks, and one of them is networking. And for a PAO, we have this magic skill. We have global reach. Public affairs and public information public affairs and public information are magical in a lot of ways. We have the ability to message globally, and all we need is the commander or the leadership's approval to do it. A lot of other organizations, whether they're intelligence or information operations or public outreach, they need all kinds of layers of permissions and reviews in order to get the message out. We can just go and do it. And because we are representing an organization and speaking for them, you know, we have the ability to go and open an account or start networking. And that's something that other groups just can't do. And it's so it gives us a lot of breadth and width to get things done. Now, in 46X, I have seven key planks, and one of them is networking. And one of the keys, especially living in DC, is knowing folks. So I've joined groups like Hill Vets and other private clubs in the area just to, you know, talk with people, meet with folks, have a place where people can take their politics hat off, even if they're a representative or a member of a house, and talk. And then also be a contact. And that helps to get rid of that the politicizing that goes on when you in the public sector.
Okay.
And when you do that, things get easier because everyone knows you're trying to do the right thing. They know you privately as well as publicly, and things get done a lot better that way.
Let's go into this question. Where do you see, you've been in the field a long time, you've had a lot of experience, where do you see the PIO, the PAO role going in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, of course it depends. I mean, the people who work for, it depends. The people who work for FEMA are going to have a very different future than the folks that work for, you know, state border patrol, or, you know, that's a hard question. The thing that I've seen that needs to increase and change is our operationalization.
I'm going to make sure when I do that video, I'm going to have you go, oh! That was hilarious.
The PAO roar.
Yeah.
I take my cues from the commercial sector. When I was working around PG&E, I noticed that their information officers had a budget, and that budget was for local advertising. It was for taking the people to lunch. It was for meeting with legislators as well as the community. It gave them much more access and ability to get things done. And that's where I see PIO, PAOs moving in the future, is that they move closer to advocacy without becoming lobbyists.
Right.
And for example, I've got a friend who is the spokesperson for, I'm going to get it wrong, and that's okay because I haven't asked for his permission to talk about him. His name's Darcy, and he works for International Fertilizer. It's a company, it's an organization that supports global trade of fertilizers.
Okay.
And he does an advocate and public relations model to where he goes after anyone who is doing, I'm going to lose the word. He goes after people who are stealing labels, or what is that called? Counterfeit.
Yeah.
He one of his messages to promote his brand is to go after counterfeiting. So he will work with his lawyers. He'll work with local law enforcement, and he'll go into a country and have a counterfeiting firm that's building fertilizer for this brand. He'll have the factory torn down. He'll have them arrested. He'll have it on the press. And that's kind of where I'm seeing the public face of public affairs and PIO to go as well, to where we aren't just just responding and waiting for the operation to happen, but we are actually nominating operations and saying, if we go out and we do this outreach, we will avoid this risk, or we will forward our mission, you know, by this much. And then we become just as much a part of designing and running operations as the rest of the organization.
Okay. So is there a book or an author who influenced you?
Oh, there's a lot of them.
Is there one you can think off the top of your head that you're like, wow?
Robert Caro, The Power Broker, Jeffrey Pfeiffer, The Seven Rules of Power. And what else is there? Well, I am reading this one right now, but it's kind of a confirmation. This is H.R. McMaster's Battlegrounds, but it's more of a confirmation of the frustrations I had than it is anything new. I mean, he was there. I was there. We both saw hubris in foreign policy and had to survive it. So,
okay. Is there one question you wish I'd asked that, and how would you have answered?
There is one more reform I'm working on, and that is to formalize or codify how public affairs and intelligence work. And it's my belief that public affairs and intelligence are separate entities and they have to remain separate for ethics standards. Public affairs people can't be seen as intelligence operatives. It destroys our ability to work with the press and the public. And then on the other side, intelligence can't be seen as working for public affairs to forward a message, because then they lose their ability to be analysts. But there is a concurrent space where public affairs operations can, you know, allow intelligence to do their job, and intelligence needs to learn how to support public affairs by providing information, building assessments, advising on effects, because they have more collection assets than we do. So in DOD, that's one of the things I'm working on, is trying to build more codification of that relationship. And I could share papers, but you have to go into a vault to see because, you know, the Intel community, they want it at the TS plus level.
Okay.
But it's basically, how do we work together, play together in order to make a more perfect military?
Got it. All right. Rapid fire questions. You ready? Texting or talking?
I don't know. I like texting.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Adult drink of choice?
Anything that happens to be available after I've had one of those days.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
I don't believe in superpowers. And here's why. I've always had a problem with Marvel and DC films, because it projects a world where someone ordinary gets blasted by a bolt of lightning or something, and they suddenly have some exclusive power that no one else has. But the truth is, we are all powerful, and we just have to apply it. And it, I think that when you watch a hero, it removes that sense that you can go out there and kick some ass yourself. And that's kind of what my platform and my feeling is no, that's not true. Stop waiting for the hero. Stop waiting for the policeman. Stop waiting for the fireman. If you can help a situation until the authorities can take over, do it, because you're the hero. Be the hero of your own story.
If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who would it be?
That's a hard one. I don't know.
Okay.
I want to have coffee with Jim Mattis, and I've already started poking around trying to figure out how to have that
happen. There you go. Ask permission or beg for forgiveness?
Forgiveness.
Anything you'd like to add?
Yes. When I'm working for the State Department, it's permission first.
Yeah.
You got to know your cultures, right?
Yeah, exactly. But how could people best reach out to you if they'd like to connect and learn more?
My LinkedIn and Facebook, I have 46X pages, but the www.46x.us is a great way you can find me. I'm also hosting the 1CA podcast, which is a show that focuses on the last 3 feet of foreign policy, whether a person is a diplomat, a field agent, or a military officer or staff, how they go out to partner nations, to local areas, work with local people, local leaders, and actually achieve foreign policy in those fields.
And I will add all that into the show notes so that it'll be easy for people to find.
Great. So do you have any other questions?
No, I know, Jack, that's exactly the way I like it. This is awesome. Jack, I appreciate you coming on the show. This has been a real pleasure to have you on. And
thank you. Good luck editing this mess.
Oh, this is great. This will be easy. Won't be bad at all. Another huge thank you to the Social Media Strategies Summit for being a sponsor of the PIO podcast. Join their First Responders Summit this April or their Government Summit this May. Learn more about confirmed speakers and programming at socialmediastrategiessummit.com and use promo code PIO podcast for 10% off of your registration.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to get notified of the latest episode. If you are listening on a platform that allows reviews, please give us a review. We appreciate any review, good or bad. It helps us improve on each episode. Until next time, be safe.